Welcome back to the show, Coast to Coast, around the world on American Forces Radio Network. Rick Tittle with you alongside Karen Lyle, and we're still talking sailing on Sail Sport Talk. And if you see on Twitch.tv or the Twitch app, in studio we have Tom Slingsby, who is a member of Sail GP Australia. But not only that, the 2010 World Sailor of the Year. That is pretty awesome, I got to say.
Yeah, no, it was a huge achievement for me. One of my checklists of my career goals, and that was probably the first career goal I ticked off.
Was it a medal, a trophy?
It was a trophy. It was a trophy presented over in Athens, Greece, and unfortunately my flight got cancelled as I was about to go there, so I had to get sent the trophy.
But then 2 years later, your own country, Australia, gives you the Medal of the Order of Australia. So now, I guess that's like an MBE in England or something like that, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Order of Australia Medal. It was given to all Olympic gold medalists at the Olympics in 2012. So, yeah, I was fortunate for that too.
Wow. Royalty.
Tom, I haven't seen you since America's Cup here in San Francisco, but you have been training in here in between a little bit here and there.
Yeah, after the last America's Cup in 2013, yeah, we came back to San Francisco about a year later and did a training camp here. And then the America's Cup, we moved over to Bermuda, and I was living in Bermuda for 2.5 years, and since then I've been back in Australia.
Where were you training just right before you came here to San Francisco for the SailGP race in San Francisco?
So we had our first event. The first stop of SailGP was in Australia, Sydney, Australia. We did that event, and the way this works is the boats get put on ships and then head to the next event for the World Series. So we haven't really done too much training. We get a couple of weeks here, about 10 days of training before the event starts next weekend.
Well, and that was Valentine's Day, and I was on my app on Valentine's Day watching your race. It was so exciting. One of the
Were you sending lots of hearts?
What I was amazed at, because I'm a little geeky about this, is that you could tap on the boat. There were all the different nations, and you would see the wind direction and the wind speed. And
wow.
For me as a sailor, I'm going, oh, wow, this is awesome. I get to actually visualize this. Yeah. But you're a strategist for the sail, the team for Australia?
No, I'm the skipper.
You're the skipper now.
Of Team Australia.
You were the strategist for the America's Cup team.
I was strategist for the 2013 America's Cup in San Francisco for Jimmy Spithill, and Ben Ainslie was the tactician. And then in the 2017 America's Cup, I was a tactician for Jimmy Spithill.
So now you're the skipper. Does that mean that you assembled the team?
Yes. I was able to head back to Australia and start recruiting all the talent we had. And fortunately, there's a lot of guys from the Oracle America's Cup team who were Australian. And we've got a lot of those guys on our Australian team now.
I would say this is a nation against nation team. So those other nations are going to be a little bit... you have upped the game for them, I would say, because you've really given them a challenge with this last race that you did, taking first.
Yeah, the first event was on home waters for us, so we've grown up sailing on Sydney Harbour, and everyone in my teams are from around Sydney, the Sydney area. So, yeah, we had to put in a good performance. We had a lot of pressure on ourselves there, friends and family watching, Australian country, all our crowd watching us and hoping that we're going to win, and fortunately we did.
What is it about sailing? How old were you that you didn't want to be a, you know, Aussie rules or a Socceroo? What was it about this sport?
I grew up, my dad's a sailor and my older sisters were sailors. I sailed maybe once a week from about the age of 5 to 15. Wow. I was full-time tennis at that stage. I was playing tennis before and after school for 6-7 days a week for 10 years. And then I actually burnt out at tennis. At 15, 16 years old, I think it was for my birthday. I said for my birthday, I want to quit tennis and never play it again. And it was just all too much, too young. And and then at that stage, I was just starting to love sailing. The Sydney Olympics were on in Australia in the year 2000, and I went down and watched the sailing from the foreshore and became obsessed. And I said, that's what I want to do. I want to compete in the Olympics and compete for my country in sailing.
That's pretty amazing that you said that about tennis, because both of my cousins, male and female, they were in Reno. They were both state champions in tennis. They played it their whole life, and they graduated high school, and they never wanted to see a tennis racket again.
Yeah.
Why does tennis burn people out so hard?
It does. It's a pretty grueling schedule. I trained morning and night, and I remember I said this was too much for me as a 15-year-old kid, and I backed the training off, and my results got worse. And then I put the training back up, and it was just too much.
Wow.
And I didn't pick up a racket for about 8 years.
Well, I think you made the right decision, as we can see. I also know that you love Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, I had Hoist Gracie in here, whose dad basically invented the sport. And he gave me a very interesting adage about how he approaches it. And I wonder if you put this into sailing. He said in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I'm not trying to beat you. I'm waiting for you to lose, which seemed weird. Can you take that and put that into sailing, or do you have to always be aggressive?
Yeah, no, for sure. In sailing, there's a common saying called he who makes the least mistakes wins. And you're always waiting for someone to make a mistake. Everyone's working at 100% and racing at 100%, and then someone will make a mistake. They'll do a bad tack or a bad jibe, a bad start, tactically lose a spot here or there. And, yeah, if you can just keep it on 100% for as long as you can, you're going to win the race. And it's not possible, but so we just try to make as little mistakes as possible.
So when you're sailing, are you only concentrating on what you need to do, or do you see a mistake and then you pounce and change your tactics?
For sure, you can see an opportunity. For example, if you're behind in the race and you're sailing upwind, you can maybe see, oh, they're opening the door here. They're sailing into less wind, or they're not covering us tight. They're giving us an opportunity to break away and get some leverage on them. You realize the opportunities, and you can decide, okay, it's too high risk to go for this now. We'll lose the race if we go for this. Or it's just risk management and assessing it as the race goes on.
So what was the opportunity that stands out in your mind in the Sydney race that you took advantage of to help you win that race?
Yeah, for us, it was all about starting. The first race of the series, we had a poor race, and we just didn't sail too well. And then from then on, we said, okay, we've got to be the team that dominates the starts. We've got to pick the side of the line which we know is favoured, and we've got to fight for it. And for a few races there, a couple of the teams didn't want to get in the dogfight with us for the pin end of the start line, and we were able to get really good starts and get away from the fleet. And then our team is very polished. We knew that if we got out in front, we're not going to make that many mistakes, and you've got to do something pretty special to overtake us. So goal was to be aggressive at the start, get out in front, and then do what we know what we can do, and that's sail well and sail fast.
Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle with Tom Slingsby. He is with Australia GP. I want to say you're probably recognized in Sydney, because here's Australia, a country of 24 million people, but they win like a third of all the medals at the Olympics. They're a very sporty lot, as you know.
Yeah.
What is your era of recognition when you go home?
Not too much, actually. Sailing's not massive. It's after the Olympics in London, I think it was my medal that sort of broke a bit of a medal haul drought for Australia. We hadn't won a gold medal in, I think it was a week and a half or so of competition.
Oh, a whole week and a half.
Yeah, something like that. And then I was the first person. So I got quite a bit of recognition for that. And but then a week after coming back to Australia, I was getting stopped everywhere I went. And I ended up moving to San Francisco for the America's Cup. So the recognition didn't last long. And now I walk around the streets unnoticed. Uh-huh. It's quite nice.
Okay.
The start of a race is sometimes the most exciting part. And for the lay public who don't know about how the race starts, can you tell us how the starting line is established in the SailGP race?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of it's tricky to start. You've got a start line, and you've got, for us in the SailGP, we've got six boats. We all hit the start line at the same time, trying to go as quick as we can. It all comes down to positioning, acceleration, and tactics, how you want to maneuver around the other boats. And then there's a mark, which is what we call a reaching angle. It's about 90 degrees to the wind, about 500 meters away from the start line. And all the boats come off the line hydrofoiling. Here in San Francisco, we'll be doing 40 to 50 knots of boat speed. Mm. And it's who gets that first position. It's the equivalent to essentially maybe a Formula One start, where all the boats are all the cars are on a straight line. You don't have your positioning on the grid. And it's who gets the best acceleration, who can maneuver to fight for the inside position. So I'd say that's probably the best way to describe it, is a straight line in a car race. And whoever can get first into that first turn has got a big advantage.
Now, the start line is established. You don't know where it's going to be exactly, right? Doesn't it depend upon the wind? And then the committee boat and another boat establish the line at the very last minute. So you don't know exactly where it's going to be.
No, it's always moving. And so we're always hanging around the start area. And once they establish a position, it's usually maybe 6 or 7 minutes before the start, we start doing practice runs. We start figuring out which end of the line is favored. We start doing practice runs to get our time on distance to make sure we hit the line going as fast as we can on the start line. And we also strategically try to figure out where the other teams are going to be and who's high risk, who's low risk, and where do we want to fit in that equation.
And one final question for you. As the skipper, you get to, I guess, pick. I think we assume you're at the helm, but maybe that's not your strength. Where do you see yourself as, I have to be right here to be most effective?
For me, I was a skipper. I was steering the boats my whole life at the Olympics and so on. And then for the first time, I sort of stepped away from that with Oracle Team USA in the America's Cups I did, and I became a strategist and then a tactician. And now I'm back steering. For me, I'm pretty comfortable anywhere in those areas, in the tactical playbooks or steering the boat. But for me, it's nice to show that I am a skipper. I can steer boats. It's been a long time since I've done it, but I probably feel most comfortable steering the boat. And this is the first time really in about 7 years where I've headed back and started steering the boats again.
And the SailGP, Karen, when is it coming up?
It's on May 4th and 5th in San Francisco. And it will be between the St. Francis Yacht Club and the Golden Gate Yacht Club, right there by the Golden Gate.
Yeah.
Well, we've been with one of the best sailors in the world. He has the hardware to back that up, and Olympic medalist as well, Tom Slingsby from Australia, SailGP Australia. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll come on back on Sports Byline. All right. Thank you so much for that. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you live in downtown San Francisco and around the world on American Forces Radio Network. It is Tuesday. And normally, we don't start so early, but we have this whole first hour dedicated to sail sport talk. Our co-host, Karen Lyle, is here. And Karen, we have some very honored guests. We have the Postmaster of San Francisco, California, Abraham Cooper, and we also have Winston Bumpus Jr., the Commodore of the Pacific Interclub Yacht Association. First of all, two great American names, huh? I mean, you guys, and you can see us on twitch.tv. So tell us a little more about why these gentlemen are here, Karen.
Well, Rick, it's always good to see you here on the show. And today we are having a special postal cancellation by the United States Postal Service. And this is a special series because it began in 1996. It is a continuing series, and it's a partnership between Building Bridges, a nonprofit in Walnut Creek, California, and USPS. And so perhaps for a moment we can have Postmaster Cooper tell us a little bit about what a postal cancellation is.
It sounds like a mail strike.
No doubt. You know, it's a unique thing for us being able to cancel a stamp. I mean, throughout history, you know, it's always whether we have, we just recently did the one with Marvin Gaye, you know, first day of issue. And, you know, obviously, the tradition of stamp cancellations and stamp collection is kind of like a lost art. But you know what? It's so significant to so many people in the United States. And I'll tell you, when we do that first day of issue, that's a beautiful thing. And now we're able to do that again and having the ability to be here with the Commodore, Mr. Winston, doing that first cancellation. Actually, we did it a couple of years ago, which was, you know, so I got a chance to experience that with tall ships. So now we're doing it all over again.
And Postmaster Cooper, I really admire you. Like the chief of police who started off walking a beat, you started just as a regular mailman walking the streets years and years ago. And what was that like to rise to the very top like this?
I got to tell you, it's obviously when you, a person like myself, I spent some time in the military, retired at the military, Navy. And then, you know, when you're taking that, coming in, starting from the ground up. You know, it's kind of good when you look back and you think about you telling people your story and you talk about the fact that, you know what, it can be done. You can do it. I kind of like to tell that as part of my history and my legend, you know, because I know it from the ground up, working my way through, going through school and working my way through college. And now being the Postmaster of San Francisco City, I can certainly tell that. And that's it's history.
It's very, very cool. Now, at Union Square here in San Francisco, we have a column to Commodore Perry, but we have Commodore Bumpus with us right here, and looking resplendent with the three stars. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your position, please.
Sure. It's great to be here this morning. I'm actually the recent past Commodore. They call him Junior Staff Commodore, of an association called the Pacific Interclub Yacht Association. And it really is basically, it's an association of all the yacht clubs in Northern California, about 105 of them in the San Francisco Bay, all the way up the Delta, down to Half Moon Bay and Monterey. And so you know, that's the role. We do events like opening day. We have regattas like the Lipton Cup. And we do things for the military. We have the wheelchair regatta every year. We get over 300 veterans in wheelchairs out on the boat for a day. Some of them have never been on the water in San Francisco. Mm. So we do volunteer work as well.
Tell us a little bit about the tall ship cannon battle. That sounds very cool.
Well, Karen's been involved and engaged in a lot of those. But the Lady Washington and the Hawaiian chieftain from Gray's Harbor, who, you know, is an educational experience up and down the coast of California, and actually get people out on real replicas of tall ships and get to experience what it's like lining up the ships under sail and then firing cannons. Of course, it's with blanks between those. It's pretty exciting, and you get a real sense of how some of that excitement was slow moving to get those boats to line up and do all of that. So,
so we just had one of those cannon battles right outside Pier 39, and Pier 39 collaborated with us on bringing people to the shore, and they were lined up and stacked. You couldn't see any space between the people, so all three stories, all of the red and white and the blue and gold ferries were out. Free to Be was out with people, and we had a cannon battle, which was on the 21st of April, and that was for this particular cancellation that we're doing. And Postmaster Cooper, can you tell us a little bit about the U.S. mail and tall ships and history about mail and water?
You know, right here in San Francisco, if you go back to the 1843, you know, that's how mail and communication between the West and the East and, you know, started. So the ships was one of the avenues that was utilized to bring the mail back and forth. You know, I talked about the Navy back then, and I tell you, you know, to get mail call when you're in the Navy, that was a beautiful thing to be out of sea. Still do it till this day. Mail gets dropped on an aircraft carrier, then it gets dispersed, you know, to smaller ships. And same thing here in San Francisco. In history shows that right here, mail was transported on ships. And we still have it going on here in the United States.
Well, and now we have these replicas, which the Lady Washington is a replica of a ship that was more than one ship, actually, that was called the Lady Washington, that was the first ship to come here to the Pacific coast around Cape Horn. And this is the 30th birthday of the Lady Washington replica that we have today, because this particular Lady Washington was built 30 years ago. And that means 30 years of service in educational programs, training. Some of the people who might even be being captains of those boats that you have, cargo ships, tugboats, whatever they are, those also get trained with Grays Harbor Historical Seaport on these tall ships, which is kind of a little bit of an interesting note. But we're going to actually do a ceremony here on the air. So I was thinking that maybe I can describe a little bit about it. These two gentlemen are going to come around to Rick's side, and we have Twitch. So we're going to do a first cancellation, and that means that inking the stamp and putting it on the envelope for the Lady Washington's 30th birthday. And there's a special little emblem that's a circle that has the ship in the middle. And these are going to be available at which post office?
It's going to be at my main post office is at 1300 Evans Avenue. And for the next 30 days, folks can come by there and purchase it with the cancellation. Or if they choose and they send a self-addressed envelope to the postmaster at 1300 Evans Avenue, San Francisco, California, 94188, I'll be more than happy to do the cancellation in that fashion as well. But for the next 30 days, purchase will be at the post office on Evans Avenue.
So, Rick, you're going to be doing the honors of letting your desk
well,
be the place of that.
Well, Postmaster Cooper,
yes.
And Commodore Bumpus, you can come over and I guess right in this general area right here. Take it away. You grab one of those envelopes. There.
So right now, Postmaster Cooper is putting the cachet, which is the envelope, and Winston has his hand on top, and they are doing the first cancellation. And this is actually Sports Byline today is a U.S. postal station for 1 hour, which means that mail is actually sent from here, and Grays Harbor is having 250 envelopes made here, and we're also, Postmaster Cooper, you're going to be going around to sending some envelopes with a special postal cancellation to the captain and crew of the Lady Washington up in Eureka, I believe. So you can take your seat back here, and Rick, you can show that to Twitch people so they know what that's all about, right? There we are.
So we're a post office for an hour.
That's right.
All right, get in line, everybody. So is this a part of history? Does this go, you'd want to take this back?
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's definitely.
Yes, and Winston, that's your copy right there, that little piece. And so the first postal cancellation was in 1898 in the Chicago World's Fair. And the thing that's unique about postal cancellations is that the postmaster is the only one for that city who makes the decision.
Yes.
And you made the decision for this. Why did you decide to do this particular postal cancellation?
For me, I mean, when the relationship between the tall ships and the postal service, 243 years later, we're still doing the same thing. We're still utilizing that fashion of delivering mail on ships. We have that going on right now on a contract without it in Detroit. So when you think about it, you know, and being part of the community, I couldn't think of anything better and the timing to do that.
Well, so, this is probably the first time in the history of radio that this has happened. We're honored to have you. I want to remind everyone this segment was brought to you by Building Bridges. We've been joined by Postmaster of San Francisco, Abraham Cooper, Commodore Bumpus is going to stick with us. Thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Really appreciate it.
All right, great stuff. We'll take a quick break, and we will come on back on Byline and Salesport Talk. Welcome back to the show. Great to have you with us, wherever you're listening in this great land of ours or around the world in other countries on American Forces and other. It is Salesport Talk. Rick Tittle with you alongside Karen Lyle, who's always in for Salesport Talk, and Commodore Winston Bumpus, still in studio. We're going to talk to him in a second. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to have Tom Slingsby, who's with Sail GP Australia, and they did win in their home waters of Sydney. So, Winston, let's go back to you for just a second, because we talked about the Lipton Cup a little bit, about inter-club regattas. When I think of regattas, I think of all these sailing boats resplendent with their full sails, but it's a competition, so then I think it's like more of an armada. I mean, where do we lie in the terminology?
Well, it is a competition, and we in the last couple of years, we've revitalized the Lipton Cup here in San Francisco. Sir Thomas Lipton gave away these trophies. There's a regatta here in San Francisco. There's one down in Southern California, in the Gulf, and all around. But this regatta is set up where there are one design boats. Each boat is exactly the same, and teams of people from the various clubs compete in a three-day event, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, to get top honors to see who are the best racers. It's not about the best boats, but who's the best racers on this great San Francisco Bay sailing venue. So it's an exciting three-day event. It's going to be June 14th, 15th, and 16th, Father's Day weekend. If you see them out on the bay, a great thing to watch. And it's hosted by the St. Francis and the Richmond Yacht Club, so it's kind of north and south in the bay here, and supported by my organization, the Pacific Interclub Yacht Association.
Well, and one of the reasons why I wanted to have you come on the show is because Salesport Talk is interviewing people of all around the world, international races, but also I wanted to focus on the role of the smaller, the yacht clubs in particular areas, because they sponsor a race. Mm-hmm. And so these are sponsored by the yacht clubs, and they're the ones out there promoting and helping helping people to get into sailing. And Richmond Yacht Club, I believe, has an inclusive sailing program. Didn't they do something for disabled sailors?
Yeah,
Could you tell us about that?
One of the things that's becoming really important is inclusive sailing. These are people that normally couldn't get on the boat, so we need to be more inclusive. People in wheelchairs, people that are blind, have other disabilities. And Richmond actually put in a person lift. It's a sling with a lift so that you can lift somebody up out of a wheelchair and get them into a boat that's suitable and they can capably sail. And so I'm actually working with another organization that's put together a West Coast Championship of inclusive sailing. It's, you know, people might know it as like Paralympics, but, you know, it's really about making it inclusive and creating a championship regatta for them and making sure that they have access to the boat. So.
And you talk about inclusivity, which is great. And I'm born in Richmond, and I went to high school in Richmond. I'm a Richmond native. And I know sometimes there's a stigma with yacht racing that it's an elitist sport. I mean, obviously the boats aren't cheap, but I know they also take great strides to make sure that it is open and to teach just the tenets of sailing, which in the old days was a life and death thing. But they try to make it so it's not just, you know, a million. It's Ted Turner on his yacht, but it's actually more open to people.
You know, and I think that is an illusion. You know, new clubs are being formed and not using the word yacht in it because it kind of puts people off. Mm-hmm. But it's just boat racing, and they're just average people. A lot of clubs have boats. You don't have to have a boat to get out there and race. But I think this is great work that Richmond's doing. Richmond, basically, they had a sail a small boat day, and this new lift was put in where they invited the public to come in. Here's the small boat. Somebody will take you out and go for a little spin, and maybe you'll get hooked like the rest of us, the bad habit that we have in loving sailing.
I remember the first time I went out on the San Francisco Bay sailing, and I just said, oh, this is something I should be doing all my life, and why wasn't I doing it before? Mm-hmm. It's just amazing bug to catch, that's for sure.
But there's great racing that goes on, both for inclusive regular racing and this Lipton Cup One design with the 10 clubs competing for it. I think it's lots that goes on out there racing, and San Francisco's world-class venue for racing.
Now, I might mention that the Pacific Interclub Yachting Association, that we affectionately called PICYA, has a wheelchair regatta that happens, and those have all five forces of the military. Can you tell us just a snapshot of that?
Yeah, so it's usually like the last Saturday in September, and we contact all the veterans' homes. They bring buses. We had over 250 veterans homes from all the way from Yountville all the way down to Palo Alto. They come out. We get them on the boat. Volunteers bring their boats. We have the fire department, Coast Guard, help lift the wheelchairs actually physically on. It's not an easy task. They go out for a couple hours. They come back. And then we have a big lunch for them. There's a band. It's a wonderful day. And put smile on the faces of these people who've given so much for us.
Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle here on Sports Byline and Sail Sport Talk. Right now we have Commodore Winston Bumpus with us. And I know you're also on the board of directors for the Recreational Boating of California, RBOC. And I would think that had to do with a lot with just like boat safety and you know, don't drink and drive, don't drink and boat, that type of stuff.
Exactly. So what we do is, you know, our legislators up in Sacramento, they're always involved, and it's a machine that generates legislation. So RBOC was formed. There's 9 representatives from Northern California, 9 from Southern California. And what we do is we look at all the legislation and make sure that there isn't anything that's in there that was put in there that may have been inadvertently put in. So we kind of oversee it and provide input to the legislators. And then we go up to Sacramento and actually meet with them our you know, as part of their constituents. So there's lots of things going on in the boating community. As you know, they're trying to redefine the definition of what a boat operator is as it relates to a recent accident that happened where somebody young was at the helm, and the person that was supervising had something to drink, but they couldn't convict him because he was not the operator. So they're looking at, should we change the definition to be the supervisor? Yeah. It's those kinds of things. And they're not always so simple, but it's good to have boaters look and work with our legislators on that kind of activity.
So, Winston, you're a sailor as well, and we have the Sail GP race coming up on May 4th and 5th here in San Francisco, and you're going to be one of the spectator boats. So tell us what a spectator boat is and how that works.
So it's pretty exciting. I watch them over the Internet when they sail down in Australia. These boats, and they were only sailing, they'll tell you, they're down there, they only had, you know, about 10 knots of wind, and they were screaming at 20, 25 knots. Wait till they get up here in San Francisco and we get our San Francisco
winds. That's
going
to be something.
Holy moly. these things are going to be screaming. They're great foiling boats. So there's lots of ways you can see it. You know, you can sign up to be on a tour boat, but I've got my own boat, and you can actually go and sign up online for a spectator boat, and there's going to be special areas where those boats are going to be allowed to be outside of the arena. So we're bringing some friends. We're going to be a great 2-day event to watch them up close and personal. I was lucky enough to be, when they had the America's Cup here, I was a course marshal. So I got to be up close and personal on my boat to watch the America's Cup. Wow. And that was fabulous. But I'm very excited to see this new format, Sail GP, And there's a lot of excitement, and especially from your boat on the bay.
So this is going to be a question from a neophyte like myself. First of all, how far away do you have to be? And then do you drop anchor or you just like tack around?
So here's the deal. When I was a course marshal for the America's Cup, I had to drop an anchor in the bay. Nobody drops an anchor in the bay. You got 10,000 boats out there and everybody's scooting around and nobody expects you to have an anchor down. But we need to do that when we were a course marshal. Spectator boats, I'm sure that we'll just hang out in do-si-do. I think if all those boats out there, because there's going to be thousands, if they anchored out there, it would be a little bit of a mess. So,
all right. Well, we want to make sure that we give special thanks to Opening Day on SF Bay sponsors, Boat US, Parker Dive, and Commodore Cruises. We have been speaking with Winston Bumpus Jr. He is the Commodore of the Pacific Interclub Yacht Association, the association of 105 yacht clubs in Northern California.
It's really great to have you with us, Winston. And that junior staff position is really well earned. That means that you were the last active Commodore for the PICYE. We're glad to have you.
And do you have just one more question? When you're out on the streets with three stars, do you get like military that don't know whether to salute you or not?
Yeah, I stop to pump gas sometimes and I get the salute. And it's like, no, it's okay.
All right, great to have you in here. Great meeting you.
It was great.
All right,
nice
when we
you.
Come
Thank
back.
So
yeah, sure. Tom Slingsby, Sail GP Australia. He will be in studio. The hits keep coming here. If you are a sailor fan, you're in heaven right now. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on Byline.